state. Dr. Temple Grandin will be at Michigan State University tomorrow. She's noted for her research and writings on animal behavior, especially how to reduce stress on animals going to slaughter. Temple Grandin's also autistic and has gained visibility as an advocate who helps advance understanding of people on the autism spectrum. Current State's Melissa Benmark spoke to Temple Grandin by phone to ask what she had in mind for her talk here at MSU.
Well, I'm going to be, one of the first things I'm going to be talking about is just the basic principles of animal handling. It's really important that people that are working with cattle and pigs and other animals understand, you know, basic behavior principles. You know, there's a common assumption that big corporates bad and small places are good. You know, that's just simply not true. What I have found is badly managed is bad, and you can have badly managed either in big or small. It basically, the most of it gets down to having good management, you know, when it comes to animal handling. I'm also going to discuss some other animal welfare issues involved housing or just pushing the animal's biology too hard. We've got a dairy cow right now that has a difficult time breeding back. We select so much for milk production that she has difficulty having a calf every year. And in order to milk, she has to have a calf.
The foodie movement is kind of focused on the sustainable raising of animals for food, but there seems like there might be a lot of newcomers getting into the small-scale slaughter business. I mean, does that concern you? Are you worried about some of the smaller animal operations observing good practices for humane slaughter?
I think we need more small slaughter plants. You see, I think basically agriculture is going to have two major sectors. You're going to have large-scale commercial, and then you're going to have the smaller niche markets. And it's a huge need for a decent, smaller slaughter plants. And yes, they can be run really well. One of the things is people have to have be trained in things like proper stunning methods, for example, because some of the problems I've seen in small plants have simply been due to lack of knowledge. And there's people out there, consultants out there, like my friend Erica Vogue, that have been going out and helping smaller plants learn, you know, some of these good practices.
You've been noted for your work in improving the conditions for food animals that are going to slaughter. Is there another group of animals that you look at these days and think, you know, here's another situation where the welfare of these animals isn't the greatest and we're overlooking some basic things in caring for them?
I'm getting very concerned about what I call biological system overload. I was reviewing some scientific papers just a week ago on problems with osteoporosis in the laying hen. This animal has been pushed hard to lay eggs. So when they get to the end of lay, they have anywhere from 20% to 80% of the animals have broken bones because they've got osteoporosis. That's an example strictly of biological system overload. No matter what kind of good housing you put them in, they still have this problem that either goes from atrocious to bad. You know, just 20% is still really bad.
So it's almost like we're using up the animals before the end of their lives.
That's right. You're just using up the animal's body totally. And I knew there was osteoporosis problems in the laying hen, but I didn't realize how serious they were until I was just reviewing them for a paper I'm doing on animal welfare. And I just reviewed some of this laying hen stuff, you know, just a few weeks ago, and I was just horrified.
You're very good at understanding how animals process information, but do you ever find that certain animals are trickier than others for you to read and kind of get inside their heads?
Well, we've got some dogs now where they've bred out the warning that the growling and the hackle that the dog's going to attack. And I just had the wife of a good friend of mine got pulled down by a pit bull cross that had been rescued, and he gave no warning and pulled this poor lady down when they were out going for a walk in the park. This dog, they deliberately had bred out the danger signs, you know, where the dogs normally warn you before they bite.
So it sounds like there are some concerns not only with the way animals are being handled, but the way they're being bred.
Well, yeah, I'm concerned about dogs. I mean, when I was a child, all the dogs ran loose. We had no behavior problems. Well, on the other hand, nobody was deliberately breeding dogs to have really, truly vicious traits. That was not happening when I was a child. Then all the dogs were out there getting socialized, because sometimes in animals that are reared by themselves, if they grow to adulthood, totally away from other animals, they'll often be vicious fighters, because they haven't learned to give and take of social relations. And I've seen that happen in dogs, cattle, and horses.
I know you're very busy looking just at your webpage and such with your professorship at Colorado State, books, appearances, the TED Talk. Is there some new project besides all that you see on the near in the near future?
Well, one of my students just finished up a really nice project looking at handling practices at feed yards in Colorado, Kansas, and Nebraska. We ended up getting really good results where some of the feed yards have really improved their handling. And I've got a little article right now in Beef Magazine. And if you're interested in some of my work on animal behavior, I've got books like Animals in Translation, Animals Make Us Human, where I talk about some of my work.
What animals do you have yourself?
Well, I can't have any. I'm traveling 90% of the time right now.
Another thing that you're noted for is helping people understand autism and some of the communications differences. And I'm wondering what's on the horizon with that for you, with that work helping
people
understand?
Well, I've been doing a lot of talks on that. And I mean, autism is a big spectrum where you're going from Einstein, who had no speech until age 3 at one end of the spectrum, to somebody that's got a lot more severe handicaps. And services today are a lot better for the more severe kids with autism. But some of the kids that we used to just call the geeks and the nerds, I'm getting worrying right now that a lot of these kids aren't learning enough working skills. I mean, one of the big things I'm pushing on is develop the kids' strengths. It could be in mathematics. It could be in art. And so they can be employable. We have a huge shortage right now in skilled trades, and that would be an excellent excellent job for some individuals that are kind of the mildly autistic, kind of geeky, nerdy type. And we just have too much emphasis on deficits and not enough emphasis on building up the things they could be good at.
Well, and that's one of the things I think about your TED Talk that I found so inspiring is that you were really focusing on, hey, this is not just about what people can't do. It's about what they can do.
Well, my ability in art was always encouraged, and my ability in art became the basis of my design work. Also, my ability to think in pictures helped me understand animals, because animals don't think in words. They think in sensory. They think in pictures. They think in sounds. They think in touch sensations, smell sensations. It's all kinds of little detailed sensory information.
When people talk about you, just the general introduction, they talk about you being an advocate for animals and for people with autism. But I wonder if you find that another group of people is really gravitating toward you, which is for really a lot of us who have felt like we didn't belong. You say the geeky and nerdy people. I mean, what is it like being a role model for people who, in school, just nobody got you? And then you get to this stage where you're seeing success and people seek you out.
Well, and I want to see these other kids that are kind of geeky and nerdy be successful, because I go out in the cattle industry and find a geeky, nerdy old hippie down in the maintenance shop. Well, that probably was a kid that was, having a lot of problems in school. And then I'm seeing the young version of that same guy today. He's getting addicted to video games and going nowhere. And one problem I see is they're not learning work skills. I also think that taking all the hands-on classes out of the schools is the worst thing they ever did. No music, art, woodworking, sewing, cooking, auto shop, and we actually have a shortage of people for doing jobs such as auto mechanic. And for some of these kids that are kind of different, that's the perfect job. It doesn't work for every one of them, but it does work for some of them. And we've also got to start learning working skills while the kids are still in high school. I'm seeing too many kids maybe get a degree in something like philosophy, and they don't have any work skills.
One of the things, too, I think that it seems like that lack of hands-on ends up meaning for people is that anybody who doesn't sort of think along the traditional academic path doesn't have that much open to them.
Well, yeah, but there's lots of stuff out there. We need people to fix cars, and we also need people to fix all the electric wires and all of those sorts of things. I mean, like electricity, that's somebody that took a year of maybe a community college course to learn that skilled trade. And I read an article about the utility companies, and they're concerned their 50-year-olds can't climb up the poles anymore. And we need people in those jobs. They're good jobs with full benefits, and it's important work. I mean, I think people like to have electricity. They like to have their cars fixed or have their heating and air conditioning fixed or do metal fabrication. I know a metal fabricator that I'm pretty sure is on the spectrum, and he has a big shop, and he builds specialty equipment for the meat industry.
It's interesting how you refer to on the spectrum. Do you find that you can kind of almost tell just because...
Oh, I can tell. I can spot them a mile away. See, the problem we got with the autism spectrum, now that they've changed the diagnostic guideline, it's turned into this huge, gigantic spectrum, basically going from socially awkward geeks and nerds in Silicon Valley to people that are nonverbal with epilepsy and very, very severe handicaps. But what worries me is the kids that I'm going to call just so socially awkward geeks and nerds sometimes get put in a class with the much more severe kids, and they're just going nowhere, and I'm seeing way too many of them get addicted to video games. There are a few of them that can learn the programming skills to go into that industry, but that's not where most of them are going. And there's a project now called Project Search, where they have internships the last year of high school, and they're putting people into very responsible jobs, such as setting up all the surgical instruments before heart operations. And that's something where you have to be very meticulous, do it absolutely right. People on the autism spectrum are very meticulous, and they're doing a great job at this. You know, we got to be doing more, you know, creative stuff like this.
Well, Dr. Temple-Grandin, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Well, it was great to be there.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.